Ed Till Show, Starcom Radio Network. This is awesome. And I believe she's from the United Kingdom, the home of the Brexit. I can't wait to get into all of that. The Brexit. But right now, it's motivate yourself. Get the life you want. Find purpose and achieve fulfillment. It's her first book. Andro Donovan. Now, it does say Ando up there, but that's a typo. It's Andro. It's a lovely name. Andro Donovan on the Ed Till Show, Starcom Radio Network. Oh, we're going to have such a great segment. Andro, welcome to the Ed Till Show from the United Kingdom.
Hi, Ed. I'm thrilled to hear your voice.
Can you get off that speakerphone? I can hear the whole room. Can you just pick up the handset?
Oh, I'm on Skype.
Oh, yeah. You got that room in the background. I gotcha. All right. No problem. You know something? Let me just adjust your audio quality. 1 second here. You couldn't put that Skype in a much more small, kind of a tight area. Because what we're really hearing, every word of yours sounds like it's coming out of the Vatican Cathedral.
Okay, hang on.
You might just go to a smaller space. Nice. And you know what? You might just even lean in toward the mic a little bit, and that will block out the room. But anyway, listen, you work on all that for a second. I'm very excited you're on. We're on one of the most important issues of my 40 years on the air. Do I sound that old?
No, you don't.
I started in 1975 talking about issues that affect ordinary people. I'll leave all that... Oh, my gosh, that's a little noisy. Are you done with the... You're good. You're good. Are you good now? Let me hear you talk now in your little corner. Hello? Oh.
I hear you on my phone and put it right to my ear.
You got it. Terrifico. All right, so it's a big issue. I've been talking about it for decades. Many of us, my age bracket, between Gen X and the tail of the baby boom, right in there, very disappointed about the outcome of education as we know it. Struggling students in every household, it seems like. When I was a kid, only a couple of kids. We had 56 in a class. A little small neighborhood Catholic school in the Bronx in New York. 56 kids, one nun, a blackboard, chalk, very few visual aids, yet 55 or 54 of the 56 kids did not struggle. So we got to get to the root of why so many kids are struggling. Help me out with that.
I think kids are struggling because there's very, very high expectations, not only from the school, but parents. And come September, start of the new year, you know, the pressure's on, especially for teens, to perform well in their exams. And, you know, the results end up being the be-all and end-all of their lives, and they equate them often with their own self-worth.
And why, I will say I'm an old-school guy, why isn't most of that true? The last part when you said the word self-worth, okay, I get that. You know, that's not what we want, but we do want guilty feelings for a C. We don't want any smiles for a C, because you're not in there to get a C. Education's expensive every which way. Taxpayers are getting bled. Private schools are almost unaffordable for a working family. And the results of education have been astoundingly disappointing. And I feel that we have not raised expectations high enough to make them jump or fall, because that's what got us out of a Bronx neighborhood. You know, with Catholic school, you had to do well. There was no such thing as anything but high expectations. Now, we thought high expectations means high performance. If you hear all day that you can really jump off a 12-story building or rappel or whatever crazy thing they do now when they go up and down these buildings, that's what's going to get you up there. What's going to get you up there is being in the milieu of what we want you to be. So how do we get around this? What's the Why do we want to really not keep them with high, high expectations and pressure? Shouldn't they feel pressured? An airline pilot's pressured?
Well, you know. I really hear you here. You know, of course they need to have the drive and the pressure and the vision to do well. I mean, you know, I meet people all the time in my workshops, you know, that are chief executives of massive blue chip companies. And they, you know, whenever they're really disclosing, they go back to my father wasn't proud of me, or my, you know, they go back to these early stories of how they felt they'd let their parents down or disappointed their parents.
Right.
So, you know, one of the things I would say is that every word you say as a parent, when those results come through, will be blazoned on their memory for time immemorial. So be careful that you don't give your kids a negative and diminished, you know, view of themselves that they'll have to spend years in therapy trying to dismantle. But I'm with you that, you know, you do have to encourage them.
You really do.
Completely demolish them because they got to see.
Well, you know, I want to go back to what you just said. I think it's a very interesting point, right? They are hurting their parents. Their parents have busted their ass to get this kid an education. And if you really are slacking, which is, you know, what we're worried about here. I mean, there are kids who are just not that bright. And, you know, we just get it. They're going to do a lot of homework. They're going to miss a lot of stickball. That's just life. But, you know, if you're slacking and you're bright when it comes to your toys and television, but all of a sudden it's geography class, you're not that bright, then we know that, you know, you need to be trying harder and you're not. So in a way, I'm not, again, I don't want to make them think they're a total loser, but they should feel, I am letting my parents down here. This is really not a game. I have a job to do and I'm failing at it because they know what I'm capable of and I should follow their lead. You know, a kid goes into a kitchen, right, and he's expected to get A's, whatever, but he's been killing himself studying all week. You see him, what are you doing? Geography. Still, I'm in it. I got a big test. All week, they're sweating it. When that kid comes home with a B+, you love that kid because he sweated out. That kid's going to be brilliant someday. But it's when it's, where's your homework? Oh, I didn't do it. What are you going to do? I'm going to do it later. And then it comes to Friday. I haven't seen you do this homework yet. Well, I did a little bit of it, but I'm going to do more. You say, you know something? This is wrong. You're letting us down. This is your job as a kid. Now, what am I off on this?
I think you've got a point. I think we've got to talk about what kind of kids are you talking about. I mean, there's the privileged kids that get spoilt rotten, and then the parents are surprised that they don't pull their weight because, you know, what have they got to work for? You know, they've got everything they need. They've got, you know, iPad, they've got phones, they've got cars, they've got all the trappings. I mean, I think that's a slightly different case to the sort of kids that, say, I used to work with when I started my life as a literature teacher in London, in very rough schools with disengaged teenagers. The only way I was going to get them to really start to work was to start to, number one, believe in themselves. So a lot of kind of developing of their own self-esteem through the way I actually spoke to them and addressed them. And secondly, I think it was about giving them the choices that they wanted. And by the time I left that school, because I focused on that, they all passed with flying colors. But they were no hopers. They were disengaged. And not to glamorize it too much, I mean, you know, I know he won't hear this, so I can say, I mean, I've got a boy who's pretty disengaged. But I know when I go into punitive parent mode, it doesn't help. What really helps him is when I understand and I look at the options he's got, and I give him lots of different opportunities to play rather than just keep beating him over the head with, you're letting me down.
Well, you know, it's true. Some kids don't respond to it, right? There's no question about that. I mean, there are some kids, the more you tell them, as you said, that there's punitive consequences for this. I don't even think it's really the thing that you're communicating from my point of view is, you know, the consequences are the ones now. You are really killing your salary history for the rest of your life. You really want to be poor, don't you? You really don't get the game. You understand how to play video game, but you don't understand how the game of life is played, how your mother and I live, the rules under which you live, whether you like them or not. The world is not made up of your choices and preferences and settings. You know, to put it in their language, This is true.
Yeah. However, exams don't test the convergent thinking, and they don't test entrepreneurial thinking or thinking outside the box. And some of our best entrepreneurs, like Sir Richard Branson, who you've probably heard of, you know, Virgin guy.
Poor fella. By the way, is he healed up?
Sorry?
Did you see his bike stumble the other day?
Oh, no, terrible.
His life, he said, my life passed before me, and his face was all banged up. So, yes, I'm a big fan of his.
Yeah, but I mean, he dropped out because, you know, he thought outside the box. And I know with my son, for instance, he's probably going to be an entrepreneur one day because he doesn't tick the boxes. He doesn't fit into the I come home and I work hard sort of kid, but he does have some creative stuff to offer. So as a parent, I think it's really important that you don't alienate your kid and turn them to other routes, like, God forbid, you know, drugs and all that stuff. Because they think, oh, well, I'm a loser anyway. I'm going to be right about that and rebel and let my parents know that I don't give a shit, you know?
Well, you know what? And by the way, you can go that far. We have a couple of words that we don't use, but you're fine with that. You're awesome. By the way, let me introduce you for people who just joined in the middle of the segment here. Andrew Donovan is our guest. The book is Motivate Yourself. Get the life you want, find purpose, and achieve fulfillment. Where's the best place for people to get the book? And also, what's your website for people who want to learn about you while we're on the air right now?
You can get the book from Amazon.com. And my website is quite easy to remember because it's www.androdonovan.com.
Easy to do. All right, so interesting of what we think of entrepreneurship. I believe that's what was your last point, right?
Yes, I work with a lot of entrepreneurs all over the world, and sometimes I get them to do this process about highs and lows of, you know, their life. And whenever they get to their childhood years or their exam years, you know, a large proportion of these guys are letting me know that they were not pretty good at school. You know, they dropped out or they were disillusioned because they didn't have the a doctor, a lawyer, an accountant. And then you can see the sort of trend going up as they leave school, because then they're sort of into a different world. So I just wanted to challenge that view that exams are the be-all and end-all. They are for
see,
one system.
Here's the thing, right? I think we agree on some, and then I think there's a controversy here. I do believe that all kids should be made to get, like, A's and B-pluses. I think that the education has been so watered down, we've really lowered what we're asking of them, that they need to be escorted through it, whatever that means. Tutoring, mom's the tutor, dad's the tutor, but somehow, some way. And we're teaming up here to say, like, this is the admission ticket to doing anything in life. In order to be a good entrepreneur, this is the second part of what you were saying, I don't think anything in the first 12 years of education, I'll say that, is unused as an entrepreneur. You're talking to one of the great entrepreneurs in America here. I created this show in 1975, and it is still a success. Now, I was 19, and it was a small scale, but I did it in Manhattan, the number one media market in the world. And I can't believe that I would be as adept an A student, et cetera, or I should say adept an entrepreneur, if I hadn't been an A student. I think that A students do everything better, because all you've really done with the 12 years of education is kind of inform them at the level of street signs. That's all we really require. We give them geography for, like, I don't know, 3 months of their life, a couple of years of school. So for them not to be able to memorize some country names, some, is it on an ocean? Which ocean is it on? What are the cash crops? I think we're handicapping them. I think we're letting them down. I think the reason I was okay with you letting me down a little bit is I'm busting my butt for you in any way you need. What do you need? Do you need to do geography for 4 hours even though it's a half an hour assignment? Hey, let's get some peanut butter and crackers. Turn off all the devices. We're hanging out for 4 hours tonight. You have a term paper? I'll see you all weekend. It's like getting a work assignment as a parent. Hey, First thing Saturday morning, nothing but, oh, we do research. Then we talk about the research. Oh, I'm really starting to understand what these cash crops are. Where's that parent today?
You know, I really resonate with everything you're saying, but what do you do if you've got a kid with dyslexia who can't memorize? They've got processing issues.
Well, you
now,
can
maybe
do,
I'm taking this very deeply, but...
Yeah, I think, but I mean, you can, right? Can't you do memorization? Right? But can't we do memorization with talking? Like, I get it. Well, I'm going to stick the book in front of him, and I'm going to sit there and time him if he memorizes off the page. If he's truly having an issue, then aren't I going to sit there and go, come on, let's try him again. Come on, let's do him again. You know, and make it a thing. I'm going to help you lift this boulder. I realize it's much heavier for you than the kid next to you, but we're moving this thing. You and me. And your mother's in on it, too. But, you know, she's doing this today, and I'm here. When I'm not here, she's here. But you're not alone. You're not going through this by yourself. And you're gonna get this. You need this. This is for you. You know what I love about you, though? Can I take a break here from all this controversy? I love that you're an English literature teacher.
Yeah.
That was an amazing choice. You believed very passionately that literature was necessary for them. You know where that goes at the school board these days. Goes right out the window with art and music if we can't afford math teaching or something. So I love where you're coming from. I just wish we could find a path to some of these things. I think I have to agree with you. This world has changed. It's moved on from the paradigm latching onto here, right? I mean, the paradigm's over.
I just got to say this, Ed, as you're saying this, you've reminded me of something. A lot of these boys I was working with came from, you know, multi-ethnic families and, you know, on the breadline, not very kind of good parenting, that kind of thing. And they were given Shakespeare to read, but a distilled version that was kind of big writing in little thin books. And when I took over, I was a sort of idealist. I was in my 20s. I said to them, why are we reading this? Why don't we read it as it's supposed to be read? And, you know, they really rose to the challenge. And so I agree with you on the level of, if you call people forth at their highest level, if you're a cheerleader for them, they respond. But when you talk down to kids and you treat them like they are second-class citizens with no respect, they'll make you right.
I agree with you. I mean, again, this is such a great subject. I hope you'll come back because we could go much deeper on this. This is really important. America, you know, it'd be interesting to know what the state of London and cities in the UK is right now on this issue. But if you knew how badly we have provided mother, father, three-way deal for, you know, the kids having two parents, get two opinions, get double the expertise, we have really had that problem in America. Certainly it's more pronounced in the low income areas. But suburbs is replete with this, and I think it's tough to have a cheerleader if the cheerleader him or herself can't manage their life. If your parents can't get it together, you're not going to get the cheerleader. Not only the cheerleader, but you know the informed cheerleader, the person that's always doing what you did with those kids. See, I went to school in the Bronx. It was $28 a month to go to my elementary school. We used to bring a yellow envelope with cash and give it to the nun. I mean, they were desperate to get us educated because it was drugs, and even back then it was heroin, with deaths in our neighborhood and gunshots, and we had gangs. They had less sexy names, but they were out there knifing and killing, etc. So I now want to talk a little bit about your writing of the book. What did the book do for you in your understanding of this, since you're now sharing it? And there's always that great experience when you retell it to yourself. You always hear new things as it comes out. How did the writing of the book affect you?
You know, it was really interesting writing the book because I have kids, and my daughter's a teenager and my boy's 13. And one of the reasons I wrote it was I wanted them to know what mummy does when she takes a flight and goes off, you know, to America or wherever I'm going. And I wanted to have it recorded so that when they're old enough to really want to read this kind of stuff, it makes a difference to them. And reading the book now, I'm looking at it and I'm so pleased I did it, because people are coming to me and saying, you know, it has really connected me back to myself, or it's giving me tools to work with my teenagers. Because the book is, you know, although my work is with CEOs, I was asked by the publisher Wiley to repurpose it for a consumer market. So it's written in a way that, you know, it's anybody's book and you can pick it up at wherever you are in your life. So whether you are, you know, the kids have flown, what do I do now? I'm disengaged from my husband. How do I reignite my whole relationship? It, you know, it looks at that kind of thing. It looks at I've got these massive choices, but I don't feel adequate to go for any of this stuff. Or just I'm a CEO and I've got this complicated life I've built, this massive monster, and I don't feel fulfilled. And I have no choice, even though I've got lots of money. So, you know, it really does appeal to a wide audience, and I'm so happy I've written it from that purpose.
Oh, God, and those are such great issues right there. That last one gets me all the time. You know, I'm one of the few out of that neighborhood I described to you. Everybody got married out of college or during college. So that's that on that score. And everybody was some kind of CPA, realtor, financial services, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, it's inevitable, isn't it? If you run and jump on a merry-go-round that young and take the first thing that comes along that has an income, it's very difficult to live a life like that, right?
Yes.
But that's where the cash is, they think. And I don't blame them, right? I mean, it looks like that's where the cash is. And the cash does mean you don't have to worry about going to hospital or, you know, purchasing a new car, a new home. That, you know, it's an evil trap to fall into, no doubt. All right. Well,
unfortunately, if you go for a career that is a money vehicle, and some people don't have a choice, you know, because they've got inherited a family business or something, you sometimes have to disengage from your core values and everything that feeds you. But there will come a point where they arrive at a point in their life where they go, "Is this it?" And then they have to make some radical changes because you can't live your life for someone else.
Ah, man, you bring up so many good points, right? But we did have, in my day, there was a dignity in service to others. So we never heard complaints, even though there was pain in sacrifice. But today, it is a din of dissatisfaction, not really me, gotta have me, me's getting lost. I don't know. It's tough. I mean, these are the changes, right? This is what's happening to the human race. Civilization in the West has really accelerated all of these areas of, you know, you're so far from want. You're so into preference. You know, we're so aware of what we know would make us feel good that I wonder, you know, if we haven't gotten soft in these areas and, like, we're going to have to put up with some pain to get the gain. But, I guess what's at the root of all this, right? It's that families do the best they can under the circumstances that they have. You can help them bring out their best, right?
Absolutely. I mean, one of the book is written in three sections, and the first part is all about journeying to yourself and discovering and the really things that light you up in life. And, you know, so many people who are very intellectual and have big companies haven't actually done that inward-looking work, because they don't actually ever stand back from their life. They're so busy, you know, running the treadmill of their life. So part of that discipline is not only to do it for yourself, but to do it for your family. And this is where we go back to that first part of this conversation, which is if you instill those values in your kids, you know, hopefully they won't be slobs and they will start to right. have some respect for themselves.
Right.
You know, and right. yourself. So it goes back to that whole family value. And in fact, I was talking yesterday to my husband about some footballers. I hope I'm not going to irritate anyone here, but I said, you know, these guys are making too much money, and most of them don't have a couple of brain cells between them.
You are brilliant.
Like
you
4
are
million for do this you know guy in their 20s.
Absolutely. Do you know we're in the midst of this in America?
The only person I know who is actually making a reasonable life. No, well, that's an exaggeration. It's David Beckham, because you know what? He comes from a very strong family and he's got strong family values. And although he's got sort of tattoos and he does all sorts of things, the fact is he is making his life work. But so many of these footballers are burnt out cases by the time they're sort of 28 and they're doing drugs and alcohol and they can't handle the wealth that's coming into their space.
Andrew Donovan is this brilliant voice. Could you listen to that all day? Your voice is amazing. I wish I had taken literature with you years ago. Andrew Donovan, our guest. Again, let me give you the plug the book here and tell you to go get it. Go get it on Amazon, if that's where you get all your stuff. Also, I want you to go to her website, A-N-D-R-O, AndroDonovan.com. The book is called Motivate Yourself. Get the life you want. Find purpose. Achieve fulfillment. I love the title. Who can say no to that? Do you want the life you want? Yes, I do. Do you want purpose? Yes. Do you want to achieve fulfillment? Yes. God, where is it? Right here in the book. Oh, you're great. All right, so listen, you come back on the show. I'm out of time. I don't believe I'm out of time. It feels like you just got here 2 minutes ago.
Yeah, I know. Doesn't time fly when you're enjoying yourself? Listen, I had a ball. I love talking to you. I'd love to meet you someday when I come to the U.S. And will I hear this interview? Will your team send it back to me?
Indeed. We will be happy to. And I'll tell you what, let's do something again soon. I bet you're terrific with scheduling, right? I bet you always have your stuff. You look in the morning and know what you have. Are you well organized?
Yes,
I knew it. I knew it. It wouldn't be anything less, would it? Oh my God. Why aren't you just piped into every classroom? You're teaching them grammar. You're teaching them enunciation. You're making it sound interesting when you speak. It must have been a joy to have you as a teacher. All right. Well, I'll tell you what. Karen, our producer, is going to reach out to you. We're going to get you back on real soon. Okay?
Lovely.
And also, she'll tell you how to get the copy. We send them out MP3. You know, people always say, Ed, do I have a link? Ed, can I get a link? And I tell them the same thing. This is not internet radio. This is actual. What do you mean? You mean like tunein.com? I go, no. This has an antenna. There's waves that come out and go. So we will definitely get you a copy. Karen will explain how you do it. But have a great week. Do you have an MP3 player? What do you have? You bet you have an iPhone, do you?
I have an iPhone. I have a MacBook Pro.
Oh my God. That's it. All right. Hold me back. Because I think we could just go with you for everything. So you just cover everything. We could have you as a tech expert, how to use apps, all that stuff. Do you love all that or do you hate that iPhone? Tell the truth now. Tell the truth.
I love my iPhone.
You love it.
I get all my pictures on my iPhone. And when I'm lonely in airports, I can look at all the pictures of my lovely family.
Do you? Oh, see? Now, right there. That's if they could cut out all that other stuff. You don't worry about getting hacked, do you? You're hack-proof, right?
No, I try not to worry about that stuff.
Good Lord. All right, good. Forget. So what about I'm rushing here, but I'm up against the clock. Quickly, are you paying any attention to this crazy election we're having?
I am, and I feel sorry for anyone in America at the moment who has a very difficult. It's a Hobson's choice, isn't it?
Oh, gosh, do I love that phrase, especially with your accent. Yes, it is a Hobson's choice. And here's the thing. You had Brexit over there. In your heart, before the result, were you expecting Brexit or were you expecting Remain?
I was shocked. In fact, I was running a retreat with a bunch of guys, and my first ground rule is switch off your phones. You don't get them till lunchtime. And, of course, that was really difficult because we just heard that, you know, we were exiting. And I said, like, you've got 10 minutes and then you've got to put them off. Otherwise, it's going to be totally distracting. We were all in massive shock.
What area of London is your accent? Do they have that? Or like, we have a Brooklyn sound, we have a Bronx sound over here, all in within New York City. You have the most lovely accent. What is that? Is that Londonish? Is that Birminghamish? I have no idea what they're from.
I was brought up in London.
You were. That's it. I'm there. I mean, I wish, I would love to see London with someone like you, who is truly expressive and interpretive and all that. So maybe on my first visit, you'll do a long voicemail, and I can just play it to myself all day while I'm walking around. Right?
I'll meet you.
You know something? As long as you don't mind getting your ear chewed off, right? You say, you know what? I offered to meet this Ed Till, and he would not shut up. Wouldn't you? Oh, I love you. Listen, thank you. Thank you so much for being on. We're going to have you back on soon because you got this great insight as a mother in addition to all these other great things. But as a motivator, I bet you're amazing. You definitely set the right tone. All right. Have a great weekend, as it were. You're many hours ahead of us, right? My gosh, it's 8:30 at night or 7:30 at night?
It is. I've got to run to my first book signing launch at Waterstones, which is the equivalent of your Barnes & Noble. So I'm also rushing.
But, oh, that's perfect.
Thanks so much for your time.
That is such a perfect plug for us to part on. All right. Have a great weekend. Have a great book signing. Bye, Andro. AndroDonovan.com is the website.